Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, but not any edition of the Tuesday Three Martini Lunch, Jim. It's got to be said early and often today, this is a huge edition of the Three Martini Lunch.
It is capital Y-U-U-U-U-U-G-E huge, Greg.
This is a day we never thought would come. Donald Trump flirted with the race for the presidency in 1988, 2000, 2008, 2012. We thought he was kidding again when he talked about 2016. And we are rolling the dice a tad since he hasn't actually announced it yet. But by the time this posts, he will have, and we have it on good authority, that he actually is going to run for president. So good, bad, and crazy martinis today, all related to the Trump presidential bid. And Jim, our regular listeners will know, Donald Trump has never spent any time in this podcast outside of the crazy martini. How is this possibly good news for conservatives? But you actually have multiple reasons. Go ahead and tell them.
I went back, you know, I think it was during the 2012 cycle when there was, you know, increasing buzz that, oh, he's going to run this year. He really means it. I went back and looked. In 1988, there were rumors he was going to run. So basically every 4 years, we go through this process and people like you and I are reasonably cynical that, oh, here we go again. This is a giant publicity stunt. He just wants to get his name in the papers again. He wants to hear people tell, oh, it'd be so great if you ran, Donald. You'd be sure to win, yada, yada, yada. Well, as you said, we've heard on good authority. He's already releasing policy plans. You don't go through all this if you're not running for president. So made the decision. He's not doing a year of the apprentice this year. He's getting in it. And for people like you and I who have mocked him for this perpetual Lucy in the football routine, one, I think we should salute him for actually getting in the game and getting off the sidelines and letting him get a sense of, you know, here's what it's like. Let's see how you actually are as a candidate, Donald. I have suspicion it's not going to be that terrific. The other thing is that Jeff Lord, who writes over at the American Spectator, has a pretty good piece where he says, look, there's a reason Donald Trump has a fan base. And it's not just because he's on TV. Rachel Dolezal's on TV. She doesn't have a lot of fans, right? And that if you look at Trump's life, you put aside the bombast, he grew up relatively modest. He certainly was not a multi-billionaire as he claims to be today. And he's risen to the heights of both, you know, financial power and I think you could argue cultural power. And for a lot of people, that's kind of the American dream. I mean, that to make not just money, but a lot of money. And he does it and he builds casinos. He builds skyscrapers. You know, when people think of a wealthy, powerful man, Donald Trump is kind of what they picture. And there's a certain admiration in that. And somebody, you know, Jeff Lord kind of lays out that we may not think of Donald Trump as a classic conservative. And in fact, there's a lot of cases where he's given money to Democrats and done things that other folks on the right might not always like. But he does kind of have this mentality of, look, I can build whatever the heck I want. I can achieve my dream. I don't need the government to help me. Jeff Lord makes the argument that he strikes this chord amongst people of, hey, I can live my dream. I just need the government to get out of my way and stop taking so much out of my pocket in taxes and, you know, stop regulating me to death and just let me pursue my dream and I'll do it. And that's probably the most powerful aspect of the Trump presidency. And that kind of wraps up everything nice I can say about Donald Trump.
Well, let's get into the bad and crazy, and these two could easily overlap based on our previous discussions. Jim, the biggest negative that I can think of right off the bat is the fact that this guy is like the bright, shiny object for the media. So he is going to get an inordinate proportion of coverage compared to where his likely poll numbers are going to be, particularly in some of the early states. His bombast is going to dominate the coverage, possibly dominate the debates, and it's going to be hard for people with, let's say, more sober, serious policy initiatives to get the oxygen they need to reach the American people when a lot of the attention is going to be on a guy who we all know is never going to be president.
Yeah, I mean, Donald Trump can be a fabulous, attention-grabbing personality. If the only measuring stick of the presidency is entertainment, then he's a great choice. But if you listen to him carefully, like I saw him speak at the NRA convention, Greg, and he went on a great length about how China and Japan and Asia were hurting us on trade deals, including steel and stuff like that. And I'm guessing these are issues that are near and dear to the heart of Donald Trump. Maybe it relates to the construction projects he's got or something. But for whatever reason, this is really of interest to him, and it was not really front and center on the minds of a NRA convention crowd. And I kind of have this feeling that he's going to go on these tangents. And a lot of people are saying, Jim, really, you're giving somebody else grief about going off on tangents? One is that he's going to probably qualify for one of those 10 slots in those first two debates. And there's an actual consequence to this. That, you know, that means Bobby Jindal might not be up there on that stage. That means Carly Fiorina might not be up there on that stage. John Kasich, governor of Ohio, might not be on stage for the Cleveland debate. That he's going to bump somebody who's actually governed some way and who knows more about how government actually works. And I just think that in a way, as much it's easy to see some of these early debates, people talking about something outrageous that Trump had said that turns out to not actually be representative of what Republicans want to talk about and what really is most preeminent in the discussion of the future of the country right now.
As far as the crazy, the thing that comes to mind right away, and I'm sure we could come up with myriad examples, what you want in a president is many different things, but one of them is the ability to stay composed and calm in a crisis. And this is a guy who has picked ridiculous feuds with people like Rosie O'Donnell and Martha Stewart and pretty much anybody who criticizes him about anything. He immediately launches into an unbridled tirade, and I don't know how well that's going to play, certainly long term over the next several months.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way of putting it, because a couple of weeks ago, he got into this huge, huge fight with Jonah Goldberg. And Jonah wasn't even sure why. First of all, he thought there was an excellent chance he was actually mixing up Jonah and Steve Hayes. Because, and admittedly, they both have goatees. They're both on Fox News a lot. It's not the most unreasonable, you know, mix-up of all time. But, you know, Steve Hayes had written something ranking the candidates, and he dismissed Donald Trump as a joke. And the result of that, Donald got furious at Jonah Goldberg, and he said – he denounced all of National Review. He said, we're going under, and it's a shame because we were once great. And, you know, like, but National Review, 1 year out of 50-some years, we've made money. We have always operated at a loss because – and you're like, oh, you're terrible businessman. No, it's the political magazines very, very, very rarely make money. Advertisers are scared of it. But like, so he just goes off this huge fight. Charles Krauthammer had said something critical of Trump, and Trump says, you know, Krauthammer tries to act smart on TV. Could you think of one sentence more disqualifying amongst Republican primary voters, Greg, than Krauthammer tries to look smart on TV? He's going to win all the votes of all those anti-Krauthammer Republicans out there, both of them. Maybe this belongs more under the bad. As we said, these two martinis really blur together. One of the big aspects when Donald Trump does kind of delve into policy, and he probably goes about ankle deep at most, is he says, I'm going to go to the Chinese and I'm going to tell them how it's going to be. You know, this idea, he makes the argument that we are negotiating bad treaties and bad deals with other countries, which may be a perfectly plausible policy argument. And I kind of wish he would delve into that and get into the details. However, he kind of says, "Look, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to tell them what's what." And I guess the Chinese are going to say, okay. He really has this kind of strange sense that, you know, but I've negotiated big business deals. I can negotiate country-to-country deals. And I just have this feeling that's a little bit different, and that as much as he may be accurately diagnosing the problem, I really don't have faith in the idea that he's got the solution. He released a statement saying he's worth $9 billion. That's not a terribly detailed account, man. Somebody said, how much do you owe? So it's entirely possible he's not the relentless financial success story. He's had casinos go under. He's had businesses decisions that didn't turn out right. None of this says that he shouldn't be proud of his overall record. But if your overall statement for why you should be president is your business record, I have a feeling it's going to come out under some scrutiny and may not be as glamorous and relentlessly successful as he sometimes makes it sound.
There's a lot to be worried about in terms of how the party's going to look, how the conservative movement might look the longer he stays in the race. But he's got every right to run. He's finally doing it. I just shudder at that first moment when some other candidate criticizes him on the stage. And instead of debating the policy, Trump will go after some personal story from 10 or 15 years ago, bring up Rubio's speeding tickets or something in a completely unrelated way to the
Your boat, Rubio, is so tiny. It's a dinghy off my yacht, okay? You know? I have a rowboat that I get into. My emergency craft is bigger than your boat. You know, that kind of stuff. Get the idea.
Right. Jim, we're back together for 2 days, and now we're going to be away from each other for quite a while. You're going to be on vacation for a week. I'll be out a little bit after that. So enjoy your time off. Enjoy the fact that you're heading out on a high note for Donald J. Trump. I can't imagine a better way to go on vacation, and we'll talk again in a couple of weeks.
I'll see you in a few weeks, Craig. I miss you.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.